Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Customer-Led Groove Show, where we discuss and share the best practices and the latest trends in customer marketing, advocacy, and customer-led growth. Today's episode is brought to you by BASE, a pioneer in B2B marketing and the industry's first CLG ecosystem for customer-led marketers, sales, and product professionals. Okay, let's welcome the CLG team and today's guests.
Welcome to another episode of Customer-Led Groove, brought to you by BASE and part of the CLG campus. Today, I'm with Adrian Spire. Adrian, hello.
Hello.
Now, Adrian has a nice fireplace background here, so you must be like out there in the woods someplace.
Oh, I wish. You know, this is how I like to have backgrounds that kind of inspire me, I guess, in some ways. So, you know, right now it's a bit chilly up here. I'm up in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. You know, there's snow, freezing rain. You know, it's a time of year for fireplaces and skiing and that kind of thing. So, you know, I like to kind of situate myself in that kind of aspect. I mean, I probably could have gone tropical, but I decided to go with winter.
No, it looks great. I'm jealous because I do like the snow, even though I'm wearing two jackets today. So Adrian is the head of community at Vanilla Higher Logic, and he also just wrote the book, The Accidental Community Manager. So we'll get into that a little bit. But Adrian, like all good podcasts and webcasts and videocasts, tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been a wonderful, varied journey through. I talk about it in the book. Essentially, like I got into community very young at a very young age, but mostly as a hobby, you know. You know, did my schooling, you know, kind of the proof that a community manager can come from anywhere. I have a degree in American history from the University of McGill University. I then went into the electronics semiconductor industry, and I worked in marketing and product marketing and did a whole stint there. I was there for more than almost a decade before I got my first professionally paid community gig. You know, I was doing a lot of hobby stuff, but this was kind of like, hey, they, you know, go take this Porsche for a spin, so to speak. And so it was a multi-billion dollar company, and I was running a community. So that was like the first little taste of it. And I'd done some work with Matomo on their community, which is analytics software. And then in 2013, this startup in Montreal called Vanilla Forums was looking for a marketing manager. So it was an opportunity for me to do some marketing and also community. So I joined them in 2013. And we got acquired by Higher Logic in 2021. And I should go back. I was actually the head of community in 2018. So we split out the role, and I got to focus just on building community and evangelism and connecting with folks. And you know, I guess I would say over the time of since 2013, I've probably been part of, consulted on, or had some part in over, I don't know, 500 plus communities. So I certainly have a breadth of experience over the years of seeing how things go right and how things go wrong. And a lot of that went into the book, The Accidental Community Manager, which is kind of a soup to nuts guide for anyone that, you know, is kind of doing this journey and coming a similar path, kind of just falling into it and trying to figure their way through the wonderful world of building communities, especially in the B2B space, which is somewhere I've spent most of my career.
Awesome. So, you know, so many questions here, but let's talk about the book for a little bit. Sure. You know, I'd be curious two things. One is the kind of the process you went through, because it's funny, like since we started the campus, I've been asked twice now, can you give me some guidelines on how to write a book? I don't know why they think the campus knows that, but so it'd be good to like get kind of your overview on the process of writing. And then, you know, you touched upon something is like, how do I get started in building a community?
Yeah. So I'll start with the book process. So I had attempted to be an author many times, and then there's still, I think, a great American novel in me. But for a business book, what I was able to do was I sat down, and the first thing I did was I wrote out the future table of contents of the book. So I mapped it out, you know, and I said, okay, what are all the things that one would need to cover? And I let that stew for quite a while just to make sure I hit everything. And I talked to some folks and made sure that I had it all out there. Then what I did is I committed to myself. And I, you know, you and I have talked earlier about this. It's about persistence. And I just set a goal to myself of every day, every Friday, because I, you know, I was building it slowly. So every Friday, several hours before work, I would wake up early. I would write, I set a goal of 1,000 words. Just, I would write 1,000 words because I did the math and I broke it out. I was like, okay, well, if I do 1,000 words, it's 4,000 a month. And by the end of the year, I'll have a book. That was kind of my thing. So right, wrong, or indifferent, even if I didn't have anything to say, I would just write 1,000 words on the topic, even if it wasn't very good, just to write the 1,000 words because I knew I could. And that was the other rule I had. I did not go back. I just wrote, because the biggest mistake that I see people doing when they're writing books is they'll want to start editing early on and they get bogged down in editing and then they don't actually move forward. So the goal was just write, even if I ended up with 100,000 pages, and I actually had a lot more content than people ended up seeing, but it was really, I wrote and wrote and wrote. The best thing that happened to me, you know, I guess like I always joke about it, and it's kind of a sad joke, but true in the sense that the pandemic was the best thing that happened to me, in the sense that, I had a very long commute to work. It was several hours a day, back and forth, like about 2 hours each way, which wasn't conducive to writing really and waking up early and that kind of thing. But, you know, working from home allowed me to now change that so that every day before work, I was able to kind of get in a couple hours, then go to work, and it accelerated the ability for me to write it. So eventually at some point I ended up with this huge manuscript, way too many pages. And that is actually, I would say it's in stages. So that first draft that took, you know, I don't want to count because I was going so slow, but let's say that took like a year, and then it was really a year of editing. That was just, you know, cutting down, saying, hey, this doesn't make sense. And, you know, kind of, parsing it down and making sure it made sense. And then I found this really great community of for freelancers and people doing it on their own, which I'll give a plug to, called Readsy, readsy.com. And I was able to find an editor. His name is Gregory Newton Brown, and he, you know, he's a freelancer for Random House and HarperCollins, and he helped me edit the book. And was really good too, because he's not a community person, so he's able to approach it as, hey, if I want to build a community, I'm brand new, I'm trying to figure it out. And I worked with him and he helped me format the book in the right format and kind of helped me get it across the line. Cause that's the thing that's the hardest thing, right? Like writing it out, it's kind of relatively, like you think it's the hardest thing. Like writing, you think, oh, it's so hard. Like, how can I write a book? It's so many words. That's actually not the hardest thing. It's when you finish that the hard work actually begins, because you're like, okay, well, how do I get this Word document now into a book that people can go buy at Amazon? Like you think it'd be so easy, but it's actually not, because there's margin requirements and certain sizing you have to figure out, and you need to know how to, you know, I had to hire like a professional designer for the cover, because it's not just something you can do in Canva. Like there's certain things you have to consider about print and the way that, I mean, maybe you could do it in Canva, but I'm not as talented enough, right? I hired a designer to design the cover, and, you know, because I had certain spacing requirements, right? So that the spine of the book was spaced properly, where so you could read it. Like there's a lot of little things that you don't recognize. So all told, you know, it was a passion project, but then at the end it was just like, I just need to ship this book at this point. But you know, now I, you know, you kind of deal with all the kinds of things. Like I'm technically the publisher of record. I had to send copies to the National Archives of Canada. I had, you know, I have obviously tax implications that I have to fill in for all the sales of the book, you know, dealing with multi-volume orders, things of this nature, like things you don't think of, and you're like, oh, I'm just going to put out a book. And then it's like, okay, surprise.
Yeah. How much time would you spend to write 1,000 words? Like, is that hours, 2 hours?
A couple hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, usually for most weeks I had, it was like a burning, like, I know what I'm writing. Because you have to understand, I had the index, right? So I knew, like, okay, I'm going to be talking about this or talking about that. But that's why the chapters are relatively short, because each was almost like a very long blog post, if you think about it. I had a lot more content, but there's a lot of stuff I took out because, you know, early on, I had the title of the book. I always knew it was going to be called The Accidental Community Manager. I always knew that. I knew that from the beginning. What I didn't realize until I started to get a bit further into it was I really wanted to focus on B2B because the problem was I started to realize that if I said it was for everything, that I would get a lot of like, not, I don't want to call lawyerism, but kind of like, oh, but in, you know, nonprofit, it's like this. And in B2C, it's like that. And it's like, yes, you're right. But that then expands the book into a much bigger book than I needed it to be. And also, to be honest, like I remember my creative writing teacher in high school said, write about what you know. And I know B2B community. So I'm not going to go and pretend like I've certainly worked with nonprofits and I've certainly worked with really huge consumer brands, but not to the extent that I have with B2B communities that it would make sense to lean so heavily or it made sense more to lean heavily on the one
side. What I really like is the discipline of writing every Friday. And what resonates for me is, I mean, I'm comfortable just writing stuff on LinkedIn or whatever, but a lot of people are not. But the idea of setting aside time, you know, each week and saying, this is my goal, I think is really valuable.
Well, it's a discipline. And I think that that also, you know, like there are some people that write some really great stuff on LinkedIn. You know, like I know that you've written some great stuff. I've seen some others that I know that write really great stuff. I end up just saving that for the book. Like that's really what ended up happening, which is unfortunate because it's, you know, people like I'm very rarely posting those long things because I'm kind of saving it for something else. But then it, you know, leads to, you know, times of silence because of it. But I'm trying to find a better balance of it, but it gets to discipline. That's, you know, some people are very disciplined on their social media, you know, like they'll post like every day or every week, or they always have a new thought. And for me, I have a note, like I use Apple devices. So I'm fully admitting that I have several books, ideas and thoughts, and I'm always like, writing out stuff. And sometimes there were times that I started to write LinkedIn posts. I was like, no, this is like for the book. Like I couldn't put it on LinkedIn because I was like, no, this really belongs in the book. So that's kind of the challenge, but it gets down to discipline. Like that's the, you have to just put the time in and push through, you know, cause I know sometimes people have writer's block, but you know, just write, just,
yeah.
I mean, like you, I mean, I touch with a lot of customers, so there's an opportunity really to be inspired and say, oh, you know what, this is a great problem. And, you know, I really wanted this book to be that kind of book where if you got stuck, there's an index at the back that you could go look up and say, oh, you know, how do I handle that and get an answer? And I reference it now because, I mean, obviously it's, you know, you don't remember everything you necessarily write. You know, it was over a 4-year period, you know, from start to end, right? So sounds like, hey, this is really a good answer. Wow, good I thought about that.
Well, you have a lot of content there that you can repurpose. So, so the second question is, and I know it's covered in the book. And by the way, I thought it was great that, you know, your fans, followers, friends, and foes were holding the book on LinkedIn and, you know, pictures of them. So kudos to you and to, you know, your network. But I know in the book, you're talking a little bit about like how to get started with community. Maybe you can just share some information on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the thing is the understanding, I guess, from the book is that whoever's going to pick up this book has kind of fallen into the community role and is kind of trying to find their way. But, you know, in terms of broad strokes, maybe for people that are listening that don't even know where to start, like forget even like the book or being a community manager. So the first thing that I've always felt where, and as you mentioned, I work at a vendor right now. And so where we normally would say, uh-oh, there's going to be a problem with this project is when they don't assign a person to manage the community. Like who's in charge? And it's more than who's in charge, like who's in charge of the community? Like who's going to be that face that's, you know, that if, you know, Susie has a problem or Jordan needs more insight or, you know, how is that? Who's making those decisions? And hopefully it's someone who has got some community experience. Like to me, that's the most paramount is having someone that knows about community and you know, depending on budget, obviously if they have a team or just them alone, but you need to have someone there. The second thing that's really important. And I think that a lot of people, where I then normally would be my kind of my second kind of thing, like, is talking to the community. Like, it's really important that you're talking to the community. And in this sense, it could even be an audience that hasn't yet become a community, but understanding like what would draw these folks into joining and participating and engaging and being part of that. And from there, you're kind of building your early beta team, you know, the kind of, and, you know, the influencers that you're hoping to, you'll bring in and be participatory when you do your soft launch and kind of building in there. The third thing is understand the needs of the business. And what I mean by that is I find like a lot of times what will happen is people will have this, they'll get very dreamy about the things that they want to build, but they're not thinking about kind of the KPIs, the reasons of existence, why your salary is being paid as a community owner, and why does it exist? But I know we'll probably get into this a bit later, but what it's, I call the most valuable people principle is the idea that you have to balance those needs of the business with the balance of the community, right? So it's understanding, yes, you may have to worry about net revenue retention, or you may have to worry about leads or NPS or whatever those things that your business has to worry about, but it's also balancing it with the needs of the community. Like, what are the things that are going to draw people in and make them want to spend time and value and give their best effort forward and connect with that? And how do you make that connection? And that's that thought. The fourth thing is platform. You know, there's so many people make the mistake, you know, and maybe I'm doing a disservice, but sometimes a forum is not the right solution. And people make the mistake sometimes that they try to shoehorn things in, you know, and, you know, sometimes you need a social network and it's not a forum. And sometimes it's a forum and you need a blog and it's really spending the time to, I mean, hopefully you have an expert, like I said, a community person that can kind of guide you and take a look and say, you know, community isn't platform. It's not equal, right? It's a community is a whole ecosystem and a forum or software is part of that. So that's really important. And then bringing that soft launch aspect into it. And then the fifth thing is measuring obviously the KPIs and things that matter, but also iterating. Cause I think a lot of times I'll have people set and forget. It's important to kind of say, this worked. Let's continue doing that. This didn't work. Let's either modify or cancel or continue. Like, you know, decide. Like I remember early on, one of my, in our own customer success community, we had these biweekly calls. And as a matter of fact, there were weekly calls and I realized, hey, these weren't working. So I realized, okay, this does work because I've used it in other communities. Maybe the frequency is too much. So I went to biweekly, you know, and then I kind of did some more iterations of, you know, how can I work this? At early on, it was like, oh, should we record them? Then I realized that recording actually reduced the ability for people to be honest and open and transparent. So we stopped recording it. So we were able to iterate. And, you know, the first call only had one person and now we're up to 30 or so. And it's a cast of characters that comes in and out. And, you know, some weeks we have 12 and some weeks we have 15 and people always find value in those calls. Even our webinar series, like when I first started doing webinars for Vanilla back in 2013, you know, I was like, we had like 1-2 people show up. Now, you know, we have 400 or 500 people show up at a webinar. You know, we could have easily just thrown in a towel and said, webinars don't work. But I knew they worked. It was just a matter of finding the right recipe and figuring out the way to approach it. And, you know, that's all part of it, right? When you're going through and doing it.
Yeah. A few things really jump out at me. One is the patience one is, that's required in doing this and taking time. Two is like, don't always default to the discussion forum format. You mentioned blogs, you mentioned social networks. Are there other formats that others should consider?
Well, here's the thing. So, you know, I think Richard Millington had a post today talking about when a forum should be used and when it shouldn't be. And, you know, I think forums can certainly be part of it, but it doesn't end and start with forums. You know, chat has a benefit, right? But I always get nervous is that people get into this either or battle. Like, we should have a Slack community and let's not use a forum. But then it's like, well, Slack is very ephemeral. You know, things happen very quickly. If you're in Europe or you're in, you know, the West Coast and there's a conversation that happens, by the time you get up, that's already passed you by and you make a comment, well, that's gone. And good luck searching for something after that. Well, yeah. At least a forum is a little bit linear. It's a little bit long-term. There's ways that you can mine the data in certain ways. So to me, in a perfect world, a perfect community will have all those things. We'll have, a newsletter and a blog and chat and video channels and social media and a forum. I think that these are all part of the ecosystems. The challenge that ends up happening is, forums are hard. Forums require time. They require investment. But to me, they will bring the biggest value. And I'm not saying that because I work at a vendor. It's just I've seen it be executed in a way that's been super successful with people, especially when they connected into AI tools that are able to kind of get sentiment analysis and identify trends and challenges and things of this nature. Like, forums have such a powerful spot that I think it gets overlooked by a lot of businesses because it's a lot of work. And unfortunately, sometimes it's just easier to say, oh, we'll just do it on Facebook. And they don't realize what they're giving up by saying, well, we're not going to invest the time. Maybe I need to write another book that's a love letter to why forums are so important. But I think that's the thing too. It's like a lot of people are like, oh, well, the Gen Z or Y or whatever letter we're using now, oh, they're on TikTok and, blah, 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 and they don't use forums. But that's not true because, when they're searching, they're going to end up at some point textually in a forum. I mean, we can call it whatever we want, but, the answers are there, like how to put together a barbecue or, what's the best school to attend or any of these things, they're going to end up in some forum where people are discussing and sharing opinions, and videos certainly play a part of that, but you can include video in forums too. So it's just a matter of how you think about creating the content and putting it together in the journey. And I just think that it just requires a lot more creativity and imagination and investment maybe that some companies aren't willing to do, but the value that'll come from it, at least the companies I've seen that have put the time and effort into it have seen enormous benefit and value. So.
Awesome. You mentioned the MVP principle. Say more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I always liked about that, and it's one of those things that is really important to me is because I found that a lot of times when people are talking about community, they talk about users or members. And I always want to remind people to think about people. And that's where the P is in MVP is most valuable people. And the thought is that we all have hopes, dreams, challenges, things that we're working on. But we want to bring these people into our community. And on the other side, we have basically MVP principles, basically a two-part idea. There's the external MVP and there's the internal MVP or most valuable person. So internally at your company, it's your boss, the person that signs off your paycheck, the one that's going to decide if this community project is even going to happen or that you're going to continue to have a job. So what the principle is to understand their motivations and their things, the things that keep them up at night and the problems that they're trying to solve. I've always believed that to be successful in life and in your career, it's about being of service to the people and making, I know it kind of sounds weird, but it's making the people that you report to be better. And solving their problems. So understanding what their motivations, their concerns are for the company as well is important. That doesn't mean that controls the way that you build the community, but you need to understand that. And then you need to then look at the external MVPs. These are people that you're trying to attract and bring in and kind of provide for and understand what's going to be a motivator for them. And then you have to combine those two together and find that balance. That's what community management to me is. It's finding that balance between those two. Because every time I've seen something fail, it's always been an imbalance of one of these. It's that they completely ignored what the business cared about and the business just said, we don't need a community. It doesn't make sense. Or they've over-indexed on what they believe their boss thought about and didn't care about what their people are coming to. And then they complain, oh, there's no engagement in my community. People aren't coming and they're not participating and they don't care about the content and I'm having struggles. Well, it's because you didn't talk to them about what they care about and you haven't created programs that are attractive to them. And maybe your concept's wrong. Maybe, whatever that bit is, like if you're, focused on leads and everything just feels icky and disgusting and a marketing funnel. Well, yeah, I'm not surprised that people aren't participating. But at the same time, if the goal is a marketing funnel, there's ways that you can work with the community. Like one of the ones I've always loved, and I've done this in many communities and very successful, is the community ebook, where the community gets an opportunity to share their knowledge and expertise and advice and get a chance to showcase their intelligence and insights and experience. And it gives the opportunity for the community kind of, hey, look, I'm part of this thing. But then it's also the opportunity that from a marketing perspective, hey, we have all these companies that are now feeling very good about our brand that are getting this ebook in this particular niche that has an opportunity to learn from experts and people in the, like me personally, like, would I rather read a book about how to use Photoshop or would I rather read a book from the community about the best tips on using Photoshop? Right? Like it's a no-brainer. Like I much more read about the tips from people that use Adobe, you know, that are in there every day and say, oh, you know what? Hey, this would have been really helpful when I began. Like, here's a tip for you. Like, I don't know, name your folders properly or, you know, whatever that is, right? Like those tips to me will be much more valuable than anything that the marketing team at Adobe will put out. No offense to Adobe. I'm sure they do great work, but I'm just saying like, you know, to me, that's more powerful, but also for the Adobe team, right? They have this book that comes out that would say, hey, you know, expert advice from our community. Like to me, that's a great piece of content for their marketing team that they can leverage. So it's a win-win for both departments.
Yeah, it really resonates with me. When I was at Intuit, we created this we called them user contribution systems and user-generated tax almanac, where small businesses and the accountants basically were creating a wiki, so a group wiki, on tax tips. And it was really quite successful. I don't know where that asset is today or where that website is, but it was all user-generated and it was a great resource. So,
well, especially in B2B. And I mean, and you kind of pointed that out is the focus of my book and what I'm talking about is B2B. So in the sense of B2B, like anyone that's in a B2B community is trying to be better at their work or job or to achieve or advance or get forward. So content that helps them that way, like you're saying, the Intuit thing, right? It's like, I'm at work, I'm trying to do taxes for my company. It's helpful to get tips from actual people using Intuit and trying to figure it out, as opposed to maybe reading a boring manual. Now, I'm sure it was very well written, but it's much better that it's a personal approach to something or some weird off question that ends up being in there. I always hate saying everyone, but most folks want to, move forward in their career. And that if they're part of a B2B community, they're looking for ways to be better at their job, make things simpler, reduce frustration, showcase their expertise, maybe look for, build up their resume so they can find another opportunity in career and network and things of this nature. And community offers all those aspects if done properly. It's just tapping into those things and understanding the motivations of the folks that are coming to it. And like, that's completely different for, a B2C community or gaming. But that wasn't the focus of the book, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I also avoid it, because you can go down a realm of, like I said, like, oh, well, what about this and that and the other? And motivations for consumer communities are very different.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. In fact, today I just posted something on LinkedIn that Brandwatch came out with why marketers are not customer focused. And they said, what's the obstacles for being customer focused? And they said, they don't have time to talk to customers. Now we can debate that. That alone is a key issue, but it was more of a B2C type of research project.
Yeah. Well, because it's volume, right? I mean, most B2B companies are not dealing in millions of customers. Yeah. For the most part, it's thousands, and it's a very manageable aspect. It's high ASP and you have that opportunity to kind of talk and understand. And that's the other thing too, right? Like a B2C community probably has millions of posts. A B2B community maybe has less traffic, but the value of what's in there is going to be a lot greater. And so it's not really so much about the volume of content, but the like, oh, you know what, this resolved a problem for me or made me feel good, or I got help and people were able to kind of assist me. And I found that, you don't need, thousands of folks in a B2B community. You just need like a good 20 or so that are really buzzing along to really make an impact on a community of that sort.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask you about is in one of your earlier podcasts, I heard you talk about the center of excellence versus the community of excellence. Can you talk a little bit about that here?
Well, I think they're basically the same. I don't know if I separated them out. I mean, the idea really is that community is at the center of the journey, in the sense that I really believe that where community can be very powerful is that if it's put at the center and creating a spot, kind of a one-stop shop. One of the things that came out in a lot of the research that we're doing around that was about people wanting to have an easy way to kind of get solutions to their problems instead of like kind of like, oh, support's over here and tickets are over here and blogs are over here. So the thought is, you know, in most cases, I'll talk obviously for HireLogic, Vanilla, and a lot of the enterprise software, you can create a space that has links to those various tools. But I'm saying putting the community at your front door and kind of being a triage center that can kind of say, okay, well, if you're having a problem, how about you start with community. If the community doesn't solve your problem, then a ticket can get created and there's a knowledge base that's searched at the same time and can kind of get you on your way towards your answer. Cause it's about speed of getting the resolution that you're looking for. And kind of the hypothesis I had is putting the community at the center is the idea that, most people want to get self-service. Most people want to get answers quickly and from their peers. They don't really trust companies as much as they trust one another. So having the community up front is the way to go, and putting the resources that we would normally put into answering support tickets, which are usually very repetitive, and also for the support team, kind of boring because they always get the same kind of thing again and again. And we do this ourselves in our success community. We have them in our success community. You know, because once you answer that question, it tends not to be asked again. You can point to it and say, hey, you know, here's that thing. So but what's coming up now are new problems and new challenges and the more interesting ones. And then the ones that are kind of specific, like we do ourselves, we'll say, hey, we need to take this offline. We need to create a ticket. And let's now have the conversation. But the community is that first front door that comes in, right, that you can kind of go and do your search. And we have federated search, so you can search knowledge base and articles and things like that up front. And then if that doesn't solve your problem, you have that option to create a ticket or ask the question in the community, but obviously defaulting towards the community first. And that's kind of where my hypothesis is. We do it ourselves, but you know, there's very few companies that are doing it fully in the best way. I've seen people, I know GiftGaff at one point was doing a really, I don't know if they're still doing it, but I know GiftGaff at one point was, I think, you get an answer within a minute or 60 seconds was like their claim on their community because all their team was just in the support community, like in the community, yeah. Right? And I know other companies have turned off the 1-800 number and the support tickets and put everything through the community, you know, just kind of streamlining everything through there. Because if you think about it, it's very rare that the support on any product needs the level of having to get a specialized help in the sense that if someone's run into a problem, you know, opening a file, doing something, in terms of file types or creating a formula or something of this nature, right? That's stuff that can be asked in a community. Obviously, the things that you want people to call on is like, I'm having a problem with my credit card. Well, yeah, you know, someone needs to call on that phone number. But I think that, you know, when people take the courage of, you know, putting the community up front, they'll see a lot of the benefits. I still think that there's sadly a good portion of people that hide their community or it's very at the bottom or their Facebook and like for me, the beta test is always like, look at where your Facebook, Twitter, social media stuff is in comparison to your community. If you're promoting outside networks more than your own internal community, you have a problem. Like that's to me, the big mistake because you want your customers to be able to talk with other customers and create those experiences and also be able to, you know, I know it's creepy in the Big Brother says, but you have the opportunity to kind of see what they're doing in the community and understand the actions that they're taking. What's the content that they're looking at? What are the conversations that are happening? You know, maybe it's an opportunity for an upsell or cross sell or an introduction. I mean, not in a creepy way, but in the sense that there's a lot of data that if you send them off to Facebook or other areas that you're losing those opportunities to have meaningful conversations or being helpful, you know?
I mean, I have a bias here, but a lot of companies I've consulted to and my previous company, I even recommend that community should be the homepage, right? This should be the main place that people go first, right? If they're going to ask questions or they want information, why not leverage the wisdom of the crowd, so to speak?
Yeah. To me, on every company's website, that support button should go to the community and like ticket, 1-800 number, all that should be like, once the community person says, okay, this is not for the community. This needs to be a ticket, you know? Every platform has a different way. Like Vanilla has the thing where it's one click and it creates a ticket in Zendesk or Salesforce case or this, that, you know, like every software has, I'm sure something of that similar nature, but it's not a lot or hard thing to integrate in an ecosystem. And that was kind of my idea is that if you're buying an enterprise grade software, you have the reason these softwares exist is, and the difference in the, like some of these free open source, you know, this is like one every day that comes out, is these are integrated with enterprise tools to make the job easier to do these types of things, to kind of integrate through and, you know, get to your customer success platform and connect to your Salesforce and have a full rich 360 view of your customer, the activities they're doing in the community to then take action. These are things you're not going to get on a social media platform.
Yep. Tons of things I would want to talk to you about here, but I want to be sensitive to your time and others' time. So just a few last questions. So as you look into your community crystal ball, you know, what do you see in terms of trends or what's going to happen in 2023 and beyond?
Well, I think that we're going to have I think there's going to be some challenges that are going to be ahead for us in the, you know, we've already seen, right? There've been some layoffs and some downsizing, which is unfortunate, but I do believe, and I could be wrong, but in my crystal ball, I believe that there's going to be a resurgence of community later this year. And I think right now the time for building and putting that together is now. And what I mean by that is really thinking about the MVP principle. Like to me, it's honestly what I live by is like, have you had those conversations with your boss manager and understand the KPIs and things that you need to measure and aligning yourself in that way? Like don't wait till that conversation happens. And hopefully you're early enough to have that conversation before it happens to then align that way. Yeah. I think that, you know, I know there's always been this debate of the a chief customer officer and this, that, and the other. I don't necessarily, subscribe to that thought. I just, my hope and continuing hope is that customer success and experience sees the value in community. And that kind of gets brought into one of their pillars. And kind of what you talked about, Scott, just a little bit ago is that if companies start to understand that community is customer experience and that it is the front door for how people learn and interact with a brand, and that it's so important that they get it right. I think we're at a point, thankfully, that has, you know, at the more larger companies that are getting it right and doing the right things, understand this, you don't have your intern running the community. You know, there was a long time ago, well, maybe it wasn't that long time ago, that interns were kind of running the social media. And then they'd be like, that screw up. And they'd be like, oh, it was like the intern screwed up and they put out a tweet that they shouldn't have or what have you. Community needs community professionals and they're out there and there's associations and there's people that are trained on it or have experience. And I know it's tough too, because it's one of those weird roles where it's not like you don't go to university and have a degree in community, but you can say to people, hey, what have you built? Show me the communities that you built or participated in, right? It's one of those things that you can kind of say, here's my body of work and take a look at what I built and how people feel about what I built. And I think that I'm very hopeful that the early cuts that have happened in the latter part of the year and the earlier part of this year are going to reverse themselves by the end of this year, if not probably in the fall. I know it's a way to go because we're in January now, but I do believe that people are going to realize that community and experience are intertwined in such an important way that there's going to be a renaissance and there's going to be so many community jobs that people are not going to know what to do with themselves. They're going to understand that maybe there's too many cuts in the wrong spots and that community is really the spot that they need to actually be investing in.
Amen. I love that. So two last questions. One is, and I like to ask these at the end, is like, where do you go for inspiration or who or what has inspired you in terms of your career or your professional work?
You know, I was thinking about that. Someone was asking me that today. I read a whole bunch of stuff that's really not community related just because I feel like that's the best way to inspire yourself in the way that you're thinking. So one person I'll give a shout out to who I read his stuff quite a bit, Avinash Kashyap. He's the evangelist for analytics at Google. He has a really great newsletter, TMAI.
We work together at Intuit.
Yeah. No, he's a great guy. You know, I have chatted with him on email a couple of times and been a big fan of his book, but it's just the way his brain works. There's no way that you can't read anything that he puts out and be inspired to look at the work that you're doing and think about the storytelling that you're doing. And I know he's not in the community space, but but you know, he speaks to me. And I would recommend people check out what he has to say, because he really thinks about how do you tell the story to your management about the work that you're doing. And well, obviously, you know him. So, you know, he, you know, I don't know if he coined it, but he talks about data vomiting or puking, data puking, right? And
yeah,
he's a big advocate against that, and just say like, don't fall into spreadsheet hell and just provide, you know, boring reports. And I think that has influenced me the most, especially just about, if I can bring anything into the community space, is making sure that we tell our stories properly in a data focused way, but bring the storytelling, because it's about people at the end of the day and racking it up. And so, he's certainly someone I go to you know, think about in that way. And then, you know, maybe it's a bit of a cliche, but I like Malcolm Gladwell, but the only reason I like Malcolm Gladwell is just how he, it's more how he's influenced how my brain works and trying to make connections between things and see how those types of things happen. So I just find that's really helpful. In general, I just go to a lot of the community of community spaces I think most of us go to. You know, I like to kind of lurk. I'm a really big lurker. I won't use the word learner, because I'm lurking. Sometimes I'm learning, but a lot of times I'm just lurking, just trying to understand, you know, kind of what's going on in the zeitgeist and if it matches with some of the conversations I have, because I certainly talk to a lot of folks, but I like to match that up with, hey, you know, what are people's challenges and questions. And it's funny too, because it's also very cyclical. You know, I've noticed that there were conversations that I was having in 2013, that 2014, that it seemed to come back again. Now it's like, didn't we already have this conversation? Like, it's kind of weird that we're now, the whole social media versus community thing is kind of like a weird thing. I feel like I'm in a time warp. It keeps, every 7 years, it keeps coming up like, oh, you know, I guess it's because now it's TikTok, right? So it's like, oh, we could do this on TikTok and we don't need a community. And, you know, it's like, oh, we could do it on Slack. We don't need a forum. And it's kind of this weird cyclical thing.
The thing about Avinash, which is, no, it's a great example. And maybe you and I are similar in this way, is what I've tried to do on the campus is the way I like to learn is from people outside my discipline, right? And so somebody like Avinash, who's writing about analytics, I mean, analytics is important as well, but he's not writing about community, you know? And so there's so much, you know, you can learn. This woman, Allison, she was on here earlier. She wrote a book called The Age of Customer Equity, also about data. But there was so much that I learned there that I could apply here. So my last question is there anything today I haven't asked you that you're like, damn, Wilder, how come you didn't ask that one?
Oh, that's a good question. No, I can't. I mean, I probably should have a question that's ready and say, hey, you know, you didn't ask about that. Well, I mean, I guess I could say like, hey, if you want to check out the book, you can get it at the website, adrianspire.com. I also have a newsletter. And you know, I hope to write another book in the future, but who knows? I mean, that's, you know, it's a lot of work. I won't lie to you, but it's persistence and, time and effort that goes into it. And, you know, I guess I could ask you like, hey, what do you see in 2023? What's your prediction? I'll ask you I'll interview you now.
Yeah. I mean, we are looking at some trends. I mean, I'm following these trends is how education, online learning and community get tied closer.
Yeah.
You know, we're both in the community space and I'm also in the advocacy space. So seeing that those are also being tied closer together. Obviously automation right now is the topic of the day. And, so what happens with ChatGPT and how people use that. So those are just like things that I'm watching closely as well. And,
yeah, well, I guess that's going to be the new one, right? Like how does ChatGPT and community and how does that all work? But at the end of the day, right, it's community is about humans. I mean, I'm sure there'll be influences, and I've already seen like people like, hey, write me some community guidelines, and ChatGPT like spits them out and things of this nature. But you know, community is still going to be about humans and connection and empathy, and it also, ChatGPT is not going to get sarcasm and other things, right? So I once again, I just see that it's an aid to humans, not a replacement for humans.
Yeah. Well, Adrian, this has been great. I'd love to get you back on sometime. And you know, once again, for folks, definitely check out his book, The Accidental Community Manager. So Adrian, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And then everybody, thanks for joining Customer Led Groove. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, and Alexa. And most people, when they say that, say, hey, you know, go there, like us, et cetera. What I like to say is just play it forward and share this podcast, share this information with others if it's valuable. So thank you.
Thank you again for joining Customer Led Groove. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on the CLG campus. Feel free to rate us, follow us, and leave a comment on any of those platforms. We hope to see you again soon when we're back in the Customer-Led Groove.